The Ticket.
Michigan Insider Podcast is brought to you in part by defense attorney and WTKA legal insider Joe Simon. Find Joe at themichigandefenders.com.
We're going to get to the recruiting roundup with Sam Webb in just a little bit. We're going to talk to John Ubakin, of course, as we always do, live in the 9 o'clock hour here on the Michigan Insider on this Friday edition of the show. But we've gone behind enemy lines with Alejandro Zuniga from themichiganinsider.com. We heard from Vance Bedford. So now let's hear from Sam's other consigliere. Here is Al Borges.
Let's rewind the tape, Al, and take me through what you saw Michigan-Illinois. This is not the bitter and the sweet yet, but Illinois' plan, Michigan's reaction to it, how things changed, if at all, when Blake Corum went out. What were your takeaways from that Illinois contest?
Well, Illinois, and again, I talked to you before the game about Illinois because I had looked at them a couple days before the game, and I felt like the way they played, their style of play, never mind their athletes, was going to be tougher on Michigan than most of the defenses that they faced. And they are talented too, which, you know, you could have great schemes and no players and not look very good. I've learned that one. But they are unique. They play a defense. All their fronts come from a one high look, okay, where most teams do their disguises from a split safety look, and they'll spin safeties down, right, or they'll stay in that cover four quarters or roll corners up into quarter half. Everything comes from split safety look. That's not Illinois. Illinois stays in a one high look so they can keep the box loaded. And by keeping the box loaded now, they can run all those run blitzes, Sam. All I call them rifles, where they bring the strong outside linebacker and the safety outside the tight end and blow up those vertical seams when you're trying to run those duo plays, those gap plays, freeing up the Mike linebacker. So and then when they want to go into cover two, which they will do, they will race the nickel back underneath, take half the field, and sacrifice a little bit of positioning for some disguise. But the biggest thing about them is they want to stop that run. And they're going to put people up there. And Michigan was at times victimized by some well-timed blitz looks. Like I said, the rifle blitzes and such. Everything they did, and not everything they did, but a lot of what they did rose hell with them. And when Blake went out of the game, a guy who can make that extra guy miss, it made a hell of a difference, particularly in the second half. They played man coverage, and they played sitting on cuts. They were going to make you take the ball over their head with either a deep ball or a double move, okay? So you got tight coverage on the back end. You got all kinds of pressures from the front with multiple numbers. If they're talented, that's tough. And if your quarterback's not feeling his oats, it could be a long night. So I think that was the thing that stood out to me the most, okay? And J.J. started the game. I think he hit maybe his first four or five passes. But Illinois started making that more difficult. They started really squeezing those routes more, and he got out of rhythm. He got in rhythm a little bit early, but he got out of rhythm, and then it became more and more of a struggle. They weren't running the ball as well, and as soon as you can't run the ball, what happens, Sam? You're getting bad down in distances, and they start blitzing your ass, okay? Or even if they're not blitzing you, it's third and 10, and those guys on the outside are coming with their ears pinned back and not worried about runs, and it's a lot tougher on the quarterback. So I think that was a big part of it. Now, Michigan, I'm not making this picture too ugly, because Michigan did some good stuff. They had a couple of nice run variations with their counter bluff, their lead power. There was some cool stuff in there they did, and they hit some runs. Hell, Corum had 100 yards in the first half, Sam. It was like they shut him down now. But now what happens when he's not in there anymore? That's what has to be addressed. How are we going to get one or more players to make up for what could be the loss of our best player?
So the obvious answer is J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
J.J. McCarthy, been watching the dude for 5 years now. Ball player. And while he struggled in this game, he tell you he missed throws. He wouldn't talk about the drops, right? He wouldn't talk about, we didn't throw any shots to kind of loosen up the defense. He will focus on the fact that he just missed balls, which brings me, and some of them some of them were, as Devin would call them, layups, right? And that's what brought me to the question that I asked you before, because I feel like in this game, if Blake and Donovan aren't themselves, right, to your point, how do you compensate for that? I think JJ has that ability, that ball player ability. Think about how much he struggled in that game. Yet in crunch time, in the clutch, he made key throws. He made big plays, right? And so for me, I wonder what they think of JJ. And here's why I ask that question, Alan. You kind of, you know, jump in and talk about rhythm for a quarterback. To me, you either think he's a game manager, just don't mess it up, you know, make a key throw when we need it, but, you know, limit the opportunity for you to mess it up for the run game. Or he's just that guy. He's established himself as that big-time quarterback that, hey, you know, if all else fails, we know we can go to you to save the day. Now, he was able to do that against Illinois, but is he to that point where, you know, you can call on him game in and game out in the fourth quarter and say, save us, if he hasn't been in the lather the three quarters before? I don't know that he's there yet, which is why I ask you, Al, how do you get a quarterback in the rhythm? That's a general question. Specifically, how do you think you get JJ in the rhythm? So those are two questions, and you as a quarterback coach and as an OC, I'm curious what your answers are.
Well, in this next game, I think it's a lot easier to do that than it was in this last game. Now, let me explain why. Illinois was not giving, other than the first drive, and we watched that. Remember, we watched that. They tried to get him in rhythm, and he did a pretty good job with it. But after a while, they were making the short, high-percentage throws difficult. So now he was going to have to get in rhythm by hitting some balls down the field, and that ain't easy to do for any quarterback with any consistency, okay? But in this next game, they're much more of a zone team. There are some holes in their coverages. There are some things in the Michigan offense that can take advantage of that. And I think one way to do what you're talking about is if you script 17 plays, 15, 17 plays, half of them are pass plays, and three quarters of those are high percentage throws. Now, what do I mean by that? Quick play passes where the ball's out quick, right? Stick routes to the tight end, slants, things like that. Hank routes, curl flats type deal. They're good against these guys. An occasional RPO, which again comes out fast, serves as a play action pass if in fact the defense gives that to you. If not, hell, let's run the ball into a light box, right, Sam?
Mm-hmm.
So those types of things. But with that, there still has to be a portion of those plays where you're going to take that damn thing down the field. Mm-hmm. So if you script eight passes, nine passes, maybe two of them are shots, whether they're over people's head or some type of layered cut that gets a big chunk of yardage. That's always been my philosophy, no matter who you were playing in opening plays. But a team like Illinois, I would tell the quarterback, they're not going to give us that short stuff. So we don't have to hit 70% of our passes. But the bombs we throw got to land. They got to land, or at least some of them do, to do enough damage to get them off us. But that said, I don't know how much of that you're going to get from Ohio State. I think the stage is such where there's some opportunities to get him in rhythm.
Yeah, they, you know, Ohio State is way, you know, they're different. Now, they'll dare you to be methodical, right? Now, I don't know if they will do that to Michigan as much as they do to other, because Michigan has shown they're willing to be methodical, right? And they'll just run it down your throats. So, you know, maybe we see Ohio State kind of take a little bit different posture, trying to put the ball, trying to put more of the pressure on JJ to make some plays down the field, because he showed early in this game, okay, he's, you know, you give him some high percentage throws, right, soft coverage, okay, boom. He was feeling, then he got out of rhythm, Al, and get back to it. Devin said, oh, he missed the layup here. There was a point, there was a return. There was a, you know, he had a guy, I think it might have been Ronnie, open on a return, and he just flat missed it.
Yeah.
Now, just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Not on Ronnie, not on the conditions. JJ just flat missed it. And I said, you know, I asked Devin at the time, I said, so, you know, how much of that is him being out of rhythm? And, you know, can they do things? Because this is, I know this dude. Like someone just said in the messages, talking about, he said, you can do video. You can talk about how long you've seen JJ play. You've never seen him have the reins of a college team. It's different than beating up on high schoolers or coming off the bench. When there is a pass 7 yards away and you don't have pressure and you miss it, I don't care. That has nothing to do with it being a college opponent, high school opponent. He missed a pass that he can make in his sleep, Al. And so that's why I was asking the question about rhythm and achieving it, and he's out of it. I'm curious, when you watch him and you see some of the misses that he wasn't even making earlier in the season, what do you see? Is there a thread? Is there a common theme to why you've seen things kind of fluctuate, kind of go up and down here that can maybe be addressed in, I don't know, even a minor way heading into the final game?
Well, I think everything to me, Sam, starts off with fundamentals. And if you think that the kid is not throwing the ball like he's capable of, and I think most people would agree that at this point, JJ has demonstrated he can do these things. You know what I'm saying? My point is, go back to fundamentals. Mm-hmm. You with me?
Yeah. Why don't we have you go out of the room, Al, and then come back in? You kind of froze up there a little bit. So go out, come back in. We'll see if we can kind of catch you back up.
All right, no problem.
All right, so we'll do that. We'll get Al Borges back in because, you know, you look back at that game, and you talk about fundamentals. To be able to, and this is one of the things I've heard you talk about, Al, to be able to repeat the fundamentals. So back, I need you to back out of the room, Al. Back out of the room.
You got it.
And then follow the link back into the room and see if that fixes your lag issue.
No problem.
See if we can get you back on point.
Yeah. We've dealt with this before. I got you.
Yeah. So one of those things where, you know, being able to repeat mechanics is one of the things that we heard. I heard Al talk about this week. Heard Devin talk about this week is that is something you can see him drive a hole shot. And Al said it's perfect weight transfer. He drives the football and it's right there. And then you see a little bit later in the game where, you know, he throws it over Colston Loveland's head. And the difference, the distinction between the two is he said, man, I just see a difference in his footwork. And we have Borges back. So Al, you talk about fundamentals and repeatable, to be able to repeat the fundamentals the same time every single time. When I was asking you, like, what do you see? That was the thing that you sort of highlighted. You said you don't see.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Being the same every single time.
Yeah, and there has to be a consistency to it, because every step the quarterback takes counts. I mean, you take one you shouldn't take and the ball's off time. If you take it in the running game, you can't hook up correctly with the back. Everything is so critical that you're very finite with your footwork and your fundamentals and such. And what can happen, and I've been guilty of this, is as you get more into the season, you get more into scheming and you get more into game planning and all that. And if you don't keep an eye on it, it can deteriorate. And so you got to sometimes when you have a game like this, it gets your attention. I know it did with me. Is hey man, I'm so interested in teaching them how to read a high low or a middle flood or something that I'm not seeing two at the balls coming out on time based on footwork. So I would go back and, you know, really be grade myself hard. Say, hey, I gotta go back to the foundation of the position. Because in this game, JJ threw some balls off balance, didn't get his hips set to the throw, was late on a couple of balls, and the ball that went through Andrell Anthony's hands, he was lucky that ball wasn't intercepted because the safety played it very poorly. Andrell should have caught it, but it was thrown late. So my point is those little things, you got to refine them all the time and stay on top of yourself about making him do it and then stay on top of him once you make him understand that it's an important thing from game one to the last game of the season.
Yeah, you know, so to me, here's the thing. And I think that JJ has I think he has amazing potential. I think he has all the tools to be a fantastic drop back passer. Fantastic drop back passers have repeatable mechanics, right? They do it the same every time. Their footwork's tied to the throw. Everything that you preach about, Al, those things are givens. Those things are works in progress for JJ. And I'm sure these are things that he's working on his own. Like, you don't have to tell him. All right, man, I'm telling you, he's drilling himself. But in the here and now, in the moment, there's some things he's already good at. He's already good at throwing on the run, throwing on the move. And if it's not there, doing some improv and running. And you know what else he seems really comfortable with? RPOs. And that's why I say I don't know quite what they think, because that's a trust thing. RPOing, that's you, the coordinator, saying, hey, young fella, go make me right. You told me one time, that's what coordinators, hey, they can't be wrong with RPO.
Be wrong with RPO. I always said that. I tell young coordinators that. I go, hey, don't fall in love with this RPO stuff now. I've done it, and it's great. But what happens, you want to put it all on the quarterback now. And he shouldn't have – he's got enough responsibility in the game without making him do that 50 times a game. You call 75% of the game and let him RPO the other 25%. So
right. And so here's what I'm getting at. Throwing on the move, improv, and all that, that's one thing. RPO is another thing. Both require some trust, right? Because you're taking some plays, some runs, maybe even away from your proven tailbacks. But then you're putting a lot of, when you talk about RPO, you're putting a lot of decision making,
right,
in his hands, right? And I just don't know where they are in that in that level of trust, the Stetson Bennett level of trust. Because you go back to that game, and this is one of the things that I thought was going to be a big difference going from Cade to JJ. Not just the athleticism and the arm; those are big. You know, Cade was, you know, Cade did a great job for Michigan. One of the RPOs weren't his thing. That's not a disparagement. That's not to denigrate him. That just wasn't his forte. So they didn't call a lot of them. And that was a glaring and stark contrast in the Orange Bowl when Stetson Bennett, they were like 13 in the first half, Al. They were RPing the heck out of Michigan. I was like,
oh, yeah.
When they
and remember something, Sam. Remember something now. 2 weeks earlier, they wanted Stetson Bennett out
of there.
He was at, but the Alabama game, I think it was, he was not good. I don't think the RPOs were looking so good that day. Okay.
Right.
But he grew. He grew from that. You know what I mean? And when they needed him, he put on an RPO clinic in the Michigan game.
He did. Hey, you facing loaded boxes and your run game isn't. Loaded boxes don't matter as much. I mean, they matter, but not nearly as much when you got Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards.
But think of it, Sam. What if you got both? What if you can RPO? And I don't mean, again, I'm use them, don't abuse them, guy in RPOs. But you got a way to attack a bloated box with an RPO / play action, and you got a back that can beat the extra defender. Put those two together, okay? You got an offense now.
You do. You do. But again, that's that trust thing. I mean, if I know, sure. I know I hand it to this guy. He doesn't fumble. He's going to make 2, 3, 4 guys miss. He might break it and go to distance. I'll play a safe route, coach.
Yeah.
Hey, just let's take you back into coaching mode, Al Borges. I mean, if you were coaching and you got the best running back in the country and an offensive line that's road grading over people and they're loading the box and it doesn't matter, you're probably handing the football off. It's just easy to do, right?
It ain't that heavy, Sam. That ball's light. Blake can carry that thing. He could carry it for miles, and it wouldn't bug him a bit.
See, but now you don't have, you might not have that, and so that's why I said, you know what do they think of Jay? I think it's not like you're going to go out and throw it 50 times or call, you know, 60% of your plays are RPOs. But I wonder if they mix it in just more than once. They just won as much as Illinois loaded the box, and they RPO'd them one time in the game, and I wonder if you can afford to do that if you're without a Blake Corum, or, you know, he's very limited. And same thing with Donovan Edwards. Can you afford to do that in this game? Or do you have to put more on the young fella's shoulders and say, hey, let's go see you be a ball player, young fella. Let's see what you can do.
You might have to. Whether it's RPOs or it's maybe 5 to 6 more passes, 5 to 7 more passes, maybe 10 more passes. Okay, I wouldn't want to put 40 plus on him and expect to win the game because your odds are not good. Not that you can't, but it's not. Percentages tell you when you throw that many balls, particularly with a guy that hasn't done that, some bad things are going to happen eventually. But he may have to up the ante a little bit. And RPOs may be part of that. I don't know. Or more play action passes. But something that puts the ball in number 9's hands and doesn't depend on the guy that you're handing it to be Superman, which to this point in the season kind of has been.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I don't want to make RPO sound like a panacea.
No, because they are not a panacea, but they are great equipment for your offense to deal with heavy boxes.
And especially for this guy, you know, in a moment where he might be struggling some, like you said, balances the equation in the box, gets the ball out quick. He's shown the ability to read them, right? I don't know, especially in the absence of a lot of alternatives. Because you look at this game against Illinois, I was talking about the first down play calling. You said, well, Sam, I mean, hell, I'm calling plays. I'm thinking about I got my quarterback is missing throws. My receivers are dropping balls or not getting open. I might just hand it off. Here's the problem, Al. You compound the issue at that point when it's -1, -1, -1, -1, -2, -3. Pop 1 for 7, but 1, 1. Now it's 2nd and long. Now that issue that you had is worse, right?
Sam, what did I tell you the call sheet looks like? Looks like a blur. You look at it and you go, man, there ain't anything on there I like right now. You know, it's so funny with play call. In certain games, you could shut your eyes and point to the play and it works. And then there's games where, like the last one, where they're in the play on that damn sheet looks worth a damn. But that's when you're challenged most as a play caller. And sometimes it comes down to what you saw the other night is getting it done in the end and maybe depending on the defense a lot more than you wanted to. Mm-hmm. But it got done. It got done with a lot of ugly football. It got done. And that is the sign. I want to make this clear to the Michigan fans. That's the sign of a great team. You are not going to play 14 or 15 football games and wipe your opponent off the map every week. Somebody is going to raise hell with you, and it's probably going to be more than one team. You're going to have a 19-17 game. You're going to have a 21-14 game or whatever. It's going to be a battle. And can those teams still win the game somehow? And sometimes what it comes down to is a matter of willing the victory. Just wanting to win the game more by making a play in a clutch, coach making a clutch call, whatever, to get that thing done when it ain't looking as pretty as you'd like it to look. But do not expect your football team to blow everybody off the map every week because it's not happening. I had a 13-0 team at Auburn, and we blew a lot of people up, but we had a couple tough ones too.
All right, so Al, I want to get to the bitter and the sweet and the grades before we switch gears. We get to Ohio State, your scout on them, and get to the questions. Folks, if you have questions for Al Borges, you can start putting them in the comments now. Whether you're on YouTube, Twitter, or Facebook, put them in the comments. We'll start getting to some of those questions a little bit down the line. And after Al gets done with the grades, I'm going to tell you about a special opportunity, special new offering here in Ann Arbor, courtesy of Jim Harbaugh. You don't want to miss that. That's called a tease. Going to tell you about that in a few minutes, so stay tuned. But Al, let's get to your bitter and your sweet.
Okay. The bitter was the inability to consistently throw the ball, because that really, in the second half of the football game when Blake got hurt, we had to have guys making plays. And it wasn't always just the quarterback, okay? We had to do a better job of protecting when we weren't running the ball as well. People had to step up. They did in the end. God bless them. But I think unless they're able to balance their offense, in particular in times where they're not rushing the ball as well, there's going to be problems. So I think that's the first thing. Handling teams that are up there in a box giving you a bunch of run blitzes. Now, there's been two teams that jump out at me, and that's Indiana and Illinois. Those two teams showed very similar thinking, I will say, not exactly the same schemes, but similar thinking in terms of run blitzing Michigan. So I think they got to handle that better than they did and still be able to be functional with a run game, even if they don't have their best player. And that's challenging. I'm not making that sound easy, because it's not. Okay. This is a couple weeks in a row now where we're still not handling man coverage as well as we could with our receiver core. I've made some plays. We're getting open against zone doing that, but we need to get some more shots down the field so we can take some bigger chunks. Total yardage was 376 to their 326. But this team is capable of being a 500-yard or close to 500-yard-a-game team if they are hitting on all cylinders. But that part of their game, I think, is got to take another step if they're going to beat the Biggies, and the Biggies are coming up, okay? But I think those were kind of the biggest deals. I think, too, the cool things, the thing I thought was sweet, I love seeing the screen. And we're going to talk about it in the telestrations, but boy, oh boy, was that night. I mean, it kept two drives going. Big plays, big chunks. The fly action screen was big. Run variations, the counter bluff, which we'll detail in the telestrations, was a cute wrinkle that got a big run from Blake, I think his biggest run of the game. The opening play of the game, the lead power, where they ran a power play, led Ronnie Bell up in there. They ran that a couple times. Both of them were hits. The first one was a big hit. Okay, but those types of things, those were really cool. And the thing that I can't say enough about, you know, is coming through in a clutch. Jake Moody, and this is an offensive show, but trust me, as far as I'm concerned, Jake can come into my meeting anytime he feels like it, and I'm going to consider him an offensive player because he is money. He is money. So, you know, just keep in mind, he's eventually going to miss one, okay? That doesn't make him a bad kicker, because everybody misses one eventually. But he has been solid when it counted. And that is that isn't necessarily offense, but that is a suite of massive proportions. So, JJ, got to get him more accurate. The type of accuracy he was showing early in the season where he was, you know, upper 70s, 80%. I don't expect that, but he's got to throw the ball. He's got to make more routine throws, more routine completions, and I think he'd be the first one to tell you that. So, there was some sweet. It wasn't all bitter, but it's going to have to take another step this coming week. The coach has got to take a step. Empty the drawer, man. It's Ohio State. Don't leave anything in the drawer. If you got it, use it. Don't worry about championship games or playoff games. The hell with that. This is the championship. This is the playoff game. So whatever they got, let it rip. Players, play like it's the last time you'll ever put pads on, even though it ain't going to be. So I think that's how you got to think of this game. That's the way I thought of every rivalry that I ever coached in. And you know, Sam, something else I want to mention too is I always, as a coordinator, kept a locker. I think we mentioned this a year ago. I think you had the question is, do you ever save anything? I go, I hate to say save it, but I will put plays in a locker designed just for Ohio State or designed just for Alabama when I was in Auburn or designed just for USC when I was at UCLA. And there'd be four or five of them that they had none of them on tape. They'd have to go back 5 years, and most guys won't do that on some of the plays we ran. So pull them out. Don't be afraid to run your quarterback in this game. I was always a little hesitant early in the year, Sam, to run the quarterback too much because if he got hurt in game two, you know, I was wanting to jump off a bridge, you know. But we're in game 12, okay? Throw caution to the wind. Run your bluffs. Put in a plus one run. Run your crack sweep, your quarterback crack sweeps. Run anything, quarterback draws. Don't be afraid to let it rip with him now because we're down coming down to home stretch and we won't want to leave any bullets in the gun. So that was always my approach. Sometimes it was good, sometimes maybe not as good, but I did not want to what did Cortez do when he burned all his ships, didn't he? Yeah, because he wasn't coming back, right? He wasn't coming back. Well,
our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
When this game's over, you ain't coming back. That's it. You either win or you lose. So.
All right, Al, greats.
Greats, okay. Oh, this wasn't a good grade game, Sam. Just wasn't. Although I don't think the O-line played that bad. I think I had them with 27 minuses totally. Pretty darn good when you consider it's four guys. I had the O-line with a B. I thought Trump did a good job. I just think there were some free defenders sometimes that they couldn't do anything about. You know what I mean? Tight ends were B-, mostly blocking, but some inexperience on routes. Screwed up JJ a couple times. The guys that had not been doing much of it were in there, and that screwed up. I gave the wide receivers a C. I did not think they played particularly well, blocking or receiving. Probably of the 11 games, that was probably the worst I'd seen him. I gave JJ a C to C minus, and most of it was accuracy and throws. That was the biggest part. As terms of his heart, I give him an A because he had a great will to win at the end, but we need more than that to beat the biggies, okay? And then the running backs, I gave him a B because I gave him a B to B minus, but because Corum didn't play half the game, some kids had to be in there that hadn't played much, and it's not like they did bad. They did the best they could, but there were a few plays that could have been made that weren't. So, but overall, the offense was a C plus to B minus, and that's kind of cutting them a little slack. I only gave them that much because I thought their will was strong. I thought they wanted to win that football game more than Illinois did, and Illinois wanted to win it pretty bad. So, like I say, sometimes you just got to will wins, and I think this is one of those.
All right, Al. Tell us about the Buckeyes, my man.
Okay, the Buckeyes, they're a little different than Illinois. This is from a configuration standpoint on the back end. They start with two high looks like so many do, okay? They play some man-to-man, but they are not primarily a man-to-man defense. Their starting point for defense is to play zone, to move their front some. They will show you what I call scrape blitzes where they'll knife the end inside, bring the nickel off the edge, and scrape the linebacker. They'll spin safeties into the box, play one high with cover three. They'll pinch their front some. Occasionally, they'll jump into an odd look, particularly when Sawyer, number 33, is in the game. You'll see more of that with him than you will the other guys. They will play conventional cover two, a conventional two deep zone with some robber twos where they can sit a guy in the middle to protect those two safeties. But, you know, they play their defense to me is it's not real complicated. There's enough variation to it to where you just don't know, you know, here it comes. But it doesn't structurally. I'm not talking about the players, because that's a whole different thing, and that's the most important thing, I might add, does not structurally create a lot of problems for what Michigan wants to do, where I thought Illinois did. You know, I don't know that Ohio State does. Now, I think the next question a lot of people like to ask is, well, why wouldn't they just do what Illinois did? Well, that's just not their culture. They can put those things in. They won't be any good at them because they didn't practice them from day one, and they'll probably put their players in bad positions if they try to mimic what Illinois did. Illinois does what Illinois does because that's what they've done from the first day they walked out to the practice field. So I think some of the – I can't even say this guy's name, Sam. You might have to help me. I don't think you can either. But it's JT.
Just call him JT.
Tui Mua. Forget it. What am I talking? All my Samoan players used to tell me, Coach, just enunciate every vowel and you can get his name right. Well,
I know.
JT got too many vowels for me now. I can't deal with that one.
JT made too many plays for Penn State. He won that game by himself.
He's a good player. He's number 44. He will play mostly on the left side. I've seen him line up on the right side. But he is a very good football player. Ty Hamilton, their nose guard, plays a shade. He's a good, solid player. Vincent, a defensive tackle, number 6. And Zach Harrison, what they call their jack, which would lead you to believe he's a linebacker, but he really isn't. He's much more of a defensive lineman. Chambers, and I believe it's Eichelberg, play the Mike and the Will linebackers inside. Active kids. They kind of get them all lined up right. It was not bad. Hickman, 14 and 12. Ramson are their safeties. 14 and 15, their nickel guy. Tanner McAllister, they kind of line up on the same side. And then 12, and I think 41 started the last game. So I'm not sure these guys are going to be in there, but I've watched 4 or 5 games. These are the people I've seen for the most part. Cameron Brown, 26, started the last game, but he has not played near as much as some of the other kids have. And number 10, Denzel Burke, he has played a lot, and he usually plays left corner. Good athlete, good player. But, they're solid. They're Ohio State. They got some guys. I mean, who are we kidding here, right? But so does Michigan. So does Michigan. And the matchup is anything but a mismatch. Okay, now, would I like to have Blake Corum? You're damn right I would. Okay, I'm not going to minimize that. But this is not a team that should be able to take Michigan apart. I can't see it. Not the way Michigan's played defense this year. And if you add to it bad elements, which are always possible, I think that plays to Michigan's advantage. And proof of that is if you look at Michigan or Ohio State playing a couple other games, i.e. the Northwestern game, they rendered themselves at times inept in that game. Offensively, which I never would have thought, but it was the elements that was keeping them, and the running game has at times been a little erratic, and I heard their running back might be hurt, so this is a pick'em game. I mean, anybody, and let me tell you something, Tim. I don't personally think, I think playing in Columbus is an advantage for Ohio State. I don't think it's a huge advantage. I think that most rival games that I've been involved in, they motivated themselves, and you didn't really care who was in the stands. You know, now that's a lot bigger, has a lot bigger effect, I think, in other games, you know, where you're not as motivated, but you can bet that the Wolverines will come out inspired to play these guys. And I guess it's a home field advantage, but I don't think it's worth many points. I'll say that.
Great stuff with Al Borges there. A lot more to get to on this show. The Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA Ann Arbor.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.